Jennifer. This artist wrote, I would like to have more reasonable expectations for myself and realize I cannot do it all, and to know when I ask for help or simply quit obsessing over things that can wait.
Right on. Yes. Good question. I'm all for more reasonable expectations. It's my theme for today. I can see it. So I've been reading this wonderful book by Wayne Mueller called Learning to Pray, and he has this great question under on page 94. And the question to meditate in your morning, whether you're in the shower or the first thing when you wake up, what do I imagine would be enough for me today? Mm. We wouldn't know enough if we met it on the road and it slapped us in the face. You know, it's always more, more, more. So really, this artist is perfect to say, like, what would be a reasonable expectation for today, or if you wish for tomorrow? I mean, like, write it down. If you do morning pages, if you journal, if you're, oh, collage it. What would enough look like? How would it feel in your body? That's the other thing we forget. We can't create anything unless we can create it in our bodies, our posture, our breathing, our facial expressions. What would enough look like? What would be reasonable? And then on the other side, flip it over. What would it mean to actually do it all? I did this once. It was mind-boggling. I wrote down everything I really thought I should do if I was going to be enough. What I do for everyone else. I mean, it was, you know, a little bit of perfectionism maybe there. But really to make it, write it down. What would it look like? Get it out on paper so you can see the absurdity of what is really running in the background of your mind, which is a story that is absolutely depleting. Another great question to ask throughout the course of the day is, what am I doing for others right now that they could do for themselves? And then just see if there's one small step that you could just take back, one small thing. Don't try to do it all at once, though, or they'll push your buttons, because if you've been doing it for them, they like that you've been doing it for them, and they don't want you to stop. And then finally, the next time you notice yourself doing something that is unreasonable or not accepting help or not asking for something you need, imagine the word stop in your mind and decorate it, paint it, collage it, and that'll give you a moment to stop. And remember, this is your life. You get to choose it. I spoke for more than 2 minutes. I'm done.
Thank you, Jennifer. Alta, this question. At this point in my career, this artist wrote, I need to work at a day job to make money. This leaves me with limited time and energy for both creating and marketing. Where can I put my artistic energy to get the biggest bang for the buck?
Okay, well, this is my life. I do these things out for artists all the time, so it's a great question. Your day job to make money. First of all, the first thing I say to people is do your day job as well as it needs to be done. No more, no less, because usually when people are saying day job, it's something they want to leave. And do that for now, because this is what's going to allow you to support yourself and still make art without scaring yourself, because you need money to make money, and so that's a first start. So while you're working, set aside 10% of your income in an art account, because you'll need it to invest in your art and your professional development. Just 10%. It's probably less than you spend on lattes at Starbucks. And then if you can, work in an art-related job, if you're not doing that already, and especially things like galleries and museums, because it never hurts to see the other side of the coin. So you actually get some experience, and you'll actually get some money at the same time if you do that. Now, when this artist talks about limited time and energy for creating and marketing, boy, I want to know everybody's answers to this, because it's, again, a constant challenge. So the first thing I'd say is, keep your energy as fresh as you can by using the limited time for specific activities that energize you. I read something this morning in one of the e-zines that said, it's so easy when I want to do it and so hard when I don't. So any limited time you have, the other way to make best use of it, you've only got as much as everybody does, so plan it ahead of time to include different things like art making, art viewing, art talking, and art buying. All of those are going to help you later on. And right now, just, you know, allocate what makes sense to you, as someone was saying earlier, as Claudine and both Jennifer were saying, what energizes you will really keep you going. As far as getting the biggest bang for your buck, I mean, you know me, I'm the big starts with what you want in the end, and then, you know, make your way creatively towards it. So the first thing, as Jennifer said, too, is you've got to determine where you are now in all of these things, your skills and resources. And then I've got a few seconds left. Decide where you want to be and define the period of time. Because as also Claudine said, deadlines have a great way of focusing your attention. But make them bite-sized, because otherwise you'll just really overwhelm yourself again.
Great. Thank you, Alita. Mark, this one came for you. How do I stop putting energy into worrying about how my life has gotten worse, is getting worse, and might get even more worse, instead of into positive visualizing and action?
Wow, that, you know, basically you're just doomed. There's not much else you can do there.
I'm on your sword now.
folks who are familiar with my work know that I'm not a big fan of positive visualization. I just haven't found much effectiveness in it personally, and in trying to teach it, I find that people run into a lot of roadblocks with it. And I guess for me, what it comes down to is it's trying to impose our will on reality. And you know, regardless of what a lot of people say, it's not possible. You know, we can be in surrender, we can be connected to what's true, we can be in flow, we can help to presence a larger reality, but through our own willpower, we can't actually, in our little ego selves, rearrange reality. It just doesn't work like that spiritually. And so when I see that I or one of my clients is putting a lot of energy or putting a lot of worry thoughts into what might happen or how bad things are, to me that there's something real there. Like anything that happens, there has to be a kernel of truth and sweetness at the center of it. And so rather than trying to suddenly stop and throw on the brakes, and, you know, I used to be a paramedic, as you said in my bio, and, you know, get thrown through the windshield, rather have somebody kind of notice what is true where you are. What is true where you are? It's kind of like walking down, to use another vivid analogy, you know, walking down the street, and, you know, you step into a little gift from one of our canine friends who's left it on the, you know, left it on the pavement there. And, you know, when you've stepped into it, a lot of people go, well, how do I not have stepped into it? You know, the question is absurd. It's like the only way to get grounding, to take another step forward, is to let yourself stand in it. Because that's where the pavement is. That's where the pavement is, right? Right? Otherwise, you're on one foot off balance going, oh, gross, what do I do now? This is going to be really bad. It's like, okay, well, you know what? I stepped in it. Okay. So stand in it. And when what I've discovered, even when things have been really bad, is that when I let myself stand in it, in whatever's going on, and take a breath, I'm like, okay, this is where I am. What's my next step? What's my next step? But to try to both, like, rearrange reality with my brain and try to not be where I am and try to move into action, it's kind of like, you know, trying to run a 100-meter dash while playing Twister. It's not a possibility. And so, you know, for those, especially for this audience, you guys are artists. You're used to being really present with truth and authenticity in order to represent it. It's the same thing in life. It's the same thing in these situations. It's like bring that artistic eye to, okay, well, what is here and what's beautiful here, what's true here, and stand in it, even if it's uncomfortable, and then find your way forward.
Thank you, Mark. That was personally really also helpful for me because I was raised with a positive thinking mother.
Mm-hmm.
And I was never a positive thinker as a child, or not even as an adult. So that really speaks to me. I love that you rearrange the priorities is what you're doing, so that people aren't stuck in a place they think they should be when they're actually standing somewhere else.
Right.
Great. Thank you so much. Yeah. Eric, we're back to you. This artist wrote, I'm involved in too many art forms. I'm what Barbara Sher calls a scanner and Margaret Lebonstein calls a renaissance soul. Although I can't imagine myself settling with just one art form. I feel that I need to narrow my focus considerably. How do I assess which to choose?
Well, I want to give an aside as an answer first and then go on to the main answer. The aside is I see this in clients a lot. This is what they report. And when you pare down their report, it sounds something like the following. I love lots of things, so I'm not doing any of them. And if you were to, you know, go to a buffet table and say, I love everything on this buffet table and I'm not putting anything on my plate, I think you would want to stop and try to figure out what exactly you're saying to yourself and why this is happening. Mm-hmm. And if, in fact, you love anything on that table, of course, that's the bottom line question here. Mm-hmm. But that's an aside. The aside is, if you hear yourself saying to yourself, I love all of these things and I'm doing none of them, it's a question you ought to be trying to analyze for yourself. The main answer is, if I'm trying to assess which to choose, I think the starting point is to decide which is the most meaningful to you, which means that you need to stop and decide what criteria you use to decide if a creative project is meaningful to you. Most artists never have this conversation with themselves, and so they don't have any way of sorting among their projects and disciplines to know which is more or less meaningful than any other. Everything turns out to carry about the same weight, which makes choosing so very difficult. So the most important thing to do is to stop everything and try to decide what constitutes a meaningful creative project. Is it one that will sell, one that ends up looking beautiful, one that was enjoyable to do, one that challenges you and taxes you and allows you to go deep, one that's been on your mind for 20 years, one that tackles a difficult but important theme, and so on. There's lots of different criteria, and these criteria are absolutely subjective. You have to figure this out. And it isn't that you're looking for a perfect answer or an answer that settles the matter for all time, but you do want to at least begin to know what you yourself consider meaningful about the work you do, and then you can choose your projects accordingly.
Mm. Wonderful. Thank you, Eric. Great. Waverly. I hold a day job, the artist writes, and I'm a workaholic. How do I spend more time creating and going to different functions without feeling like I am wasting time?
Yes, good question. I was really struck in this question by the use of the word workaholic because in my understanding of the term, and I think I would define myself this way sometimes, that often means someone who is, you know, comes from a certain compulsive busyness and wanting to fill up the day with a lot of activities, and it seems that could be channeled really easily into an art career. I don't see why those same skills that could be applied to a business career or, you know, to a career in any kind of job couldn't be applied to art, you know, simply the setting of goals, the making of lists, the development of deadlines, setting quotas, finding other people to help with that process in terms of holding you accountable to deadlines. I think you could channel that energy very easily into an art business. But I also kind of wanted to question the use of that word because although workaholic is usually a badge of honor in our culture, I think for a lot of people it is a very painful state to be in, and there's a certain judgment in it. And so I kind of, you know, thought about that. And workaholic could mean I love my work so much I do it all the time, in which case I like to ask people when they have a word that has some judgment in it to take away any, to describe the situation they're in, but to take away all the judgmental words. So I thought, what is workaholic if you take away the judgment? It could be mean I love my work so much I do it all the time, in which case, great. I mean, that sounds fine to me. Or it could mean I like to be productive all the time, in which case this person, the artist, could just, you know, channel that in the art direction. It could also mean, though, I have more work to do than I can reasonably get done, so I'm working all the time trying to get it done. And I think that's a condition that a lot of people have talked about already in the panel, that it is one of those areas where, like Jennifer suggests, you might want to do a time diary and find out what your, you might want to question what your expectations are. You might have to give up doing some of that work. You know, I think that's something we just don't, it's not considered acceptable to say, no, I can't do all of this. You know, I have to give something up. But I think that might be part of the answer to this problem as well.
Oh, thank you, Waverly. Alita, here's one for you. There are so many options, from fairs to galleries to eBay to paying contests. How do you balance these options to maximize your recognition and sales?
Boy, when I read this one again, I could talk a lot about recognition and sales, but I know that's happening tomorrow. And for me, what jumped out again was balance the options.
Yes.
And when I hear people saying balance the options, the first thing I want to say is that I think of balance as dynamic, and other people have alluded to this. There is no such thing as everything in order and everything done. So think about the concept of a mobile. And so imagine a mobile, not scales of justice. If you think of scales of justice, you know, two equal things and one's tipping, you're going to be on a teeter-totter for the rest of your life. So that might be fun for a while, but, you know, if someone jumps off the other side, you end up with a thud. If it's a mobile, it's more like what happens. You know, I love this. I've been using the talking about rhythm for a while, so I need to talk more to Waverly, because every other week my whole life is different because of the different responsibilities I have with a family and not. And I'm sure other artists have the same. So what you need is a fulcrum, you know, a point where all the elements meet and that can solidly hold all of those. And if you think about it, you make your heart art with your head, your hand, and your heart, and all of the other speakers have spoken more eloquently about that. But that's the fulcrum. It's not just one part. And once you start that, if you come from purpose and from really what makes you feel good and energized, you can go forever.
So they need to look at these different options as all part of a series
all
of choices
of the
in the mobile.
Thing. That's right. And then come back to, as I said earlier, to looking at the total part of how it all fits into their whole life, the goals that they have, the roles, the responsibilities, and relationships. If this artist wants to be in a museum, then having a YouTube video that talks about, you know, college fun and so on, as I'm working with an artist today, it's not going to work for them. So it's the whole picture that they need to look at. In fact, I actually do, as was suggested earlier, have artists paint a picture of their life as they would like to be and get into that feeling before they start taking the action. And think about, when I think about each of these things, it makes me just want to cringe personally to do work on the back of my website. So I don't do that because then I can't balance the other options.
Right.
Sometimes
right.
you need help.
Right. So answering this question really means that you have to answer other questions before this one.
Absolutely. Otherwise, you're going to be spinning a lot of wheels, and you're going to be wasting a lot of time, and then you'll get really frustrated, and why do that?
Right. So this question is, in some ways, the cart before the horse.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Mark, here's another one for you. This artist wrote to me, I have had some personal challenges when my father died a year ago, and it took a larger personal toll than I realized at the time. In the months that followed, I recognized how scattered my attention between my creative life, my family life, and my day job became. I feel overcommitted and scattered far more often than I think I should. How do I deal with this?
Yeah, okay, grief again. So there's two points I want to make here, and the first point is I used to do critical incident stress debriefing, part of a team when I was a paramedic. That's when really, really bad things happened and you had to go in and debrief the emergency workers because of what they'd witnessed. And just to say that this is a very, very brief description, but that's what kind of rose to my mind, like, oh, is this person still dealing with some grief and they haven't gotten the real support and love and maybe even professional help that they need to kind of move forward. So that's something that kind of jumps out at me immediately. So that's one thing I would say. Setting that aside, if that's not the issue and it's just, okay, how do I get back on the horse again, so to speak? Something else that I want to mention that hasn't been mentioned yet that I think is really critical is that a lot of us lead solo lives. You know, we're self-employed or we're, you know, solo artists or doing whatever you're doing. I want to make a pitch for people to create a mastermind group for themselves, to find colleagues who are roughly in the same situation that have kind of balancing strengths and weaknesses and who are willing to be compassionate accountability partners to not only bring in a sense of, okay, well, take a look at this, how can we move you forward, but also to bring in that level of compassion, because it's not about being a drill sergeant when you're in a mastermind group. It's about how does the magic of the group help each individual really get a good reflection of the truth of what's going on and to see blind spots that are happening, to be able to focus. Jen Loudon, who's on this call here today, and I are a part of a larger mastermind group, and it's been amazing. It's been amazing what's been able to happen. I've been able
Yay!
Just dear, dear help there. And so I want to say, you know, why do we have to do this alone? There's no reason to do this alone. Get some support.
Great. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Jennifer, the last one is for you. This one wrote, creating art and marketing art. There must be a way of doing this where the marketing supports and fuels the art making and vice versa. How do I get the two horses to pull together and not go in opposite directions?
I love this question because it's a really, spiritually, it's a very mature question. It's pointing towards what we all want to do, which is we want to live our lives in a way that feels whole. You know, I've been working with women around this whole idea of self-nurturing for, 15, 16 years. And at first I thought, nurturing yourself is just something you do between therapy sessions. No, it's something you do after a bad day. But what I've come to realize as I've matured is that it's actually the attitude, the foundation, and the practices that allow you to live your life. So most of the time, it is nurturing what you're doing, because it's the attitude you approach it with, it's the extra juice that you have to take you through the hard times of showing up for to be conscious or to do the things that you might not be in the mood to do. So this question so beautifully points towards, really, it's not about this or that, either or, it's about the whole. And I love that. And so what I want to say is, well, then how do you get there? How do you stay there? Obviously, she's already pointing in that direction. So when the either-or conversation comes up, oh, I should work on my art, or I should market, or I should learn about marketing, as Mark beautifully pointed out earlier, stop. Do one of Eric's relaxation techniques. You know, take in a nice, you know, 5-6 second breath, and then let out a nice 5-8 second exhale, and ask yourself, is it true? Is it true that I have to have one or the other? How about if your art and your marketing space or information are near each other and you flow back and forth between the two? Let the energy from the two feed each other. What if you decided to make art about marketing, or to make marketing and art, which Mark Silver has, you know, Mark has talked about? Be open to them informing each other. And then I thought, well, what if you had some of your friends over, your artist friends, and you got a bunch of fun art material process, like art journal stuff, out, and you talked about marketing while you were making art and shared ideas, and let the energy of the two fuel each other. Also, I think, I remember when I was a screenwriter years and years ago, I always thought, well, if my agent would just do all the marketing for me. You know, that is such an immature place to be. And I love it that we're leaving that behind in this whole conversation and with this question. Marketing is not the worst part. It's no different than making the art. And once we really embrace that, we can have such a more generative, comforting, nurturing life.
Yeah, it's really remarkable. I'm so glad you're pointing this out, that we fail to recognize that our perspective is the color of the glass we're looking through when we're approaching anything.
Oh, of course,
So if we're approaching marketing from the perspective of, oh, this is awful, oh, this is, I can't stand it, oh, I don't know what I'm doing, then that smokes up the glasses, so that's how it's going to be for you.
Yeah.
If you approach it with, this is something I may not know much about, but, like, I didn't know much about my art when I started, but I'm going to learn. I can learn. I can do it like I can do my art. I can do this. Knowing that you can make your art, you already know you have the ability to do something. You can just turn and put that right on to the marketing piece. Thank you for pulling that together like that.
You're welcome.
If you're joining us late, I want you to know that you are on the call for the first panel day of the Smartest Telesummit 2008. You can always learn more of what we're up to at www.smartest-telesummit.com, and smartest is spelled S-M artist. We've come to the hot seat section of the panel day. This was almost a mini life story that came in one of the vision questionnaires. This artist is anonymous at this point, only due to our early technology learning curve, where we didn't realize the vision questionnaires had no place for the artist's information to be made deliberately, so we got a few in the very beginning. But this artist is somebody who signed up early, did the vision questionnaire immediately, so you could tell the commitment was there. Here's her story. It may not be her, but I think it might be. This year, I made contact with a small local gallery and had the opportunity to have my first solo show, which forced me to paint like crazy, to have 23 paintings ready to hang. Claudine, you were talking about that earlier.
Uh-huh.
I updated my bio, artist statement, created a new press packet, and made contact with all the local newspapers. This resulted in an interview and story in one of the papers. It was a lot of work, nerve-wracking, but I did it. The show was a success. At the opening reception, I overheard one visitor say, "There are so many people, it's almost difficult to see the paintings." I sold a number of works and made new contacts. I learned that the art business is just that, a business. It takes effort, but it's a great ride. I want to produce 4 paintings a month, but I only listed 15 hours of painting time each week in the vision questionnaire because life gets in the way. I'm juggling freelancing as a designer and a relationship, and the seesaw seems to be tipped towards time spent in all the other areas of my life besides my art. I want my life and my art business to be integrated, not split between art and other things. How do I do this? So what we're going to do now is we're just going to, each panel member is going to respond to this artist's story and situation. Eric, I'm going to let you take the ball first.
Well, I thought I'd focus on just one piece of this. Obviously, there are lots of things going on. The part I wanted to focus on was on her desire to produce 4 paintings a month, on the idea of output and connecting how we're doing to output. So I think the answer is to not put so much emphasis on output and to let go of the idea of turning out those 4 paintings a month, and instead just relish that you have 15 hours a week to paint, and then to treat those 15 hours like a real creativity practice, something that you attend to daily with calm reverence and some high energy. So you do the work in the time that you have available, and then you let the output take care of itself. I think the main thing is to actually spend those 15 hours a week painting, and then move on to the other aspects of your life with a clear conscience and some goodwill. I think that's the essence of integration. If over time your painting sells so well that you can give up the freelance design work, then you'll have more hours at your disposal to paint, but that remains to be seen, and there is nothing to be gained by pining for that time to come. The proper task is to do your painting in the time you have available, strive for excellence both in the painting and in the marketing, and embrace the rest of your life too, including your relationships. If you keep telling yourself that you should be painting more or that you should be turning out more paintings, that ups your stress level, makes yourself sad, and doesn't do a single good thing for your painting life. So, to underline and repeat, try to relish those 15 weekly hours, because that's really something of a blessing to have that many hours available.
Great. Thank you, Eric. Claudine, how would you like to respond to this story?
Well, first of all, congratulations to this person for success already, and sounds like things are going really well. And I'd like to echo what Eric said about the fact that she has 15 hours of painting time each week is great and is a lot more time than a lot of other people have. So if she could just focus on that time instead of thinking that she should be doing something else or something more, I think she'll feel more satisfied. And another thing to think about is that you need to live life to inform your art. So instead of feeling constantly like her relationship with other people or her job is getting in the way of making art, how does she not know that that's not informing her artwork? We can't just sit on an island all by ourselves and make art and never interact with other people. So maybe if she kind of looks at it that way, that that the rest of her life actually helps inform her art instead of detracting from it, that she'll feel more positive towards doing things that are not involved with art making directly.
Great. So you're talking about an integration, that the perspective is that it is all integrated anyway. One just has to be aware of it.
Yes. I mean, you can't just only paint all the time without having life outside to then inform
right.
your artwork that way.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Oh, thank you so much, Claudine. Alita, what wise words do you have for this artist?
Well, I really think this artist has, as Claudine said, pulled off something amazing and to be congratulated for it. And it may be that this is going to be the way this artist is going to be successful. I work with some people who they love to work that way in big bursts and spurts, as long as they can keep those going and do enough of those during the year. But to add to what has already been said, if you start by working on purpose and really saying, okay, I'm doing this for now, but I'm headed in that direction, as Jennifer said, I'm pointed in that direction, and I can see my art and all of these things as a whole cloth, and Claudine said that too. So one of the important things for this artist, aside from finding out what works for them and producing enough work to do that, is to really honor their style and really celebrate that, because every artist does this differently. The next thing to do is to really also look at ways in which you might be able to negotiate a change with the current employer and the other people that you're supporting, your family members or whoever else you're taking care of. And if you tell them about that, it's surprising what will happen. You may find you have more support for your art career than you thought, and they may, in fact, be able to help you with it. So you might think about things like flex time or job sharing or telecommuting if that's not already happening. But remember, it's been said before, and I think Carolyn Miss said something along the lines of, don't expect everybody else to embrace changes that mean that they're going to get less and you're going to get more. Kind of works
okay.
that way.
Okay.
And the other thing is to take good, really, really good care of yourself, your head, your heart, and your hands. I mean, your physical, emotional, and spiritual energy when you're juggling all these things is what's going to be able to allow you to keep all those plates spinning in the air and to change them out as you want to.
Great. Thank you so much, Alita. Mark, I'm really love to hear how you would respond to this artist's story.
So would I.
Oh, great. It'll be a surprise for all of us.
It always is, isn't it? So, you know what really spoke to me about this is that, wow, this person is in a growth phase. Like, there's a change that's happening here. This person has gotten some success and got really wonderful success, has gotten a real taste of this, has seen, wow, you know what, I can do this, and wants more, and is feeling the pain between the place where they're being birthed into and the place that they're sitting in right now. And I just have both a lot of compassion and a lot of inspiration for that place. And I think that's exciting. And so what I see about this is to understand that, oh, this is a change point. This is a change point. This is a decision point in the career about, okay, am I really going to go for it with my art career? I know, I kind of know what it takes to get there. I've been successful with it. Can I go for that momentum? And I think what's going to need to happen is going to need to understand that change, really look at it, maybe sit with it, maybe put aside a day or some time to sit with it in your heart or with someone who can support you to do that, a loved one or somebody who understands you, and to say, wow, am I really ready to step into this place? Am I really ready to be birthed into this? Am I ready to let go of some of the trappings of my life that are fading and stepping into this new place? I keep repeating myself, but that's what I'm feeling.
Yeah,
and so that juggling is going to be a shifting of focus from one thing to another, and some things are going to fade away. So, I mean, this is a huge topic. I mean, this just a huge vista in front. But that would, for me, would be the first step and the most fundamental to see.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Mark. That's I'm in awe of this panel. I mean, I knew what I was hoping each one of you would pull out of your rabbit's hat, but what you all have pulled out is just, quite frankly, blowing me away. Waverly, I'd love to hear the way that you heard this story and what it struck in you.
Okay, great. Yes, I am. Now that Mark has reframed it, I can see exactly that is what is the story behind this. But I kind of approached it from the time point of view when I first read it, and I agree with Eric, that part of the problem is this: I want to produce 4 paintings a month in 15 hours of painting time. That's an old, really old-fashioned kind of time management way of looking at things. Like, I have these goals, I have this much time, I'm going to accomplish them. And I just don't think time management tools work particularly well because they leave out a lot of the qualities that are important to us, the emotional and spiritual and physical qualities about us as biological beings existing in time. And that's part of what I'm going to talk about in my workshop, is how to use natural time rhythms more. But I think there's something especially different about creative time. And I know all of the artists on the call have probably experienced this. There's times when you sit down and you're going to produce something, and you work and you work and you work. And when you get up, even though it's hours later, you have produced nothing. And there are other times when you sit down thinking, oh, I have this very difficult thing to do. And 10 minutes later, it's done. And you are shocked that it's creative time is completely mysterious, completely unpredictable, completely unexpected, and unmanageable in some ways. And I think, so I liked Eric's comment, you do the work, you don't have an expectation about the product. I do think that setting aside time and having a sacred sense of the time you want to be yours creatively is very important. But I thought my take on it was just the produce 4 paintings in a month with 15 hours of painting time was an unnatural kind of goal, and it was going to be really frustrating for the artist.
Very interesting. Now, it's very interesting for me to hear, because the Vision Questionnaire has a whole series of sections asking artists specifically how much time they feel they have to spend on different aspects of their life. And that was my effort to get a sense of where they are in terms of their own sense of how much they are able or willing to put into what they're doing.
Right, and I love the idea that you would set aside time for art. It's just how the output is connected to that time seems a little problematic.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. Fantastic shift of perspective. I really appreciate it. Jennifer, tell us what you heard when you heard this story.
Oh, golly. Well, I'm just feeling, first of all, just gratitude for all this wisdom that we're getting to spend time with you all, panel members. You're amazing. And then I just keep seeing this image of wanting to put a party hat on this person and go, hey, let's celebrate. God, 15 hours a week to make art? Come on. I bet there's lots of people listening that are like, I am so jealous, and they're not even able to listen to anything that we're saying because they're like, I want that 15 hours. It reminds me a little bit of the big wide swath time story. And I can only be creative if I have a big swath of time. But in fact, what most working artists know, not everybody, but most, just we need actually less time. We need, it's the old adage, give a busy person something to do and it'll get done, right? So 15 hours is plenty of time. You definitely want to celebrate that time. And I also, to play off what Mark said, is get comfy with hunger. You want to create. Let that desire be something that's like, it's like scratching an itch when you get to work. It's not a bad thing that you want more time. It's actually a good thing. Let it draw you forward to be more creative about how you work or how you eke out a little bit more time. Let the desire, the feeling in your body draw you forward. I also just got to go back to the whole idea of expectations. There's definitely some expectations kind of floating in the background here that you can't get it done, that 15 hours isn't enough. And, it's exactly what Waverly said. Be open to the mystery of the creative process, open to that time, and maybe use the life organizing process that I'm going to talk more about in my segment, which is to check in with your body, you know, relax your belly maybe. Take a moment to remember a time when you felt so spacious about your creative work that you had enough time. Let those feelings circulate and warm up your heart. And then ask yourself, where am I right now? Where am I right now? And then that will allow you to realize, oh, I actually am here creating, and it is enough right now. And the last thing I want to say is get really curious about that 15 hours, about your working process. I co-teach a writer's spa, a writer's retreat every summer in Taos. And one of the things that I really, really drive home to my writers is, when do you work best? Do you work best around other people, by yourself? What time of the day? Get to know your own creative process so that you can work with that and use that knowledge like you know the tools that you need to paint or your favorite pens that you use to draw.
Great. Thank you, Jennifer, so much. Well, this brings us to the end of the panel discussion for day one. I just want to say what has struck me about this panel, besides the depth of the responses, which truly have been beyond what I could have expected, and I'm just so excited. I can't wait to share this day with others. But the other thing that struck me today was the way the emphasis flowed between all of you that to me speaks to the integration that artists need to pay attention to, where their expectations and what they've taken in from the outside world of what you should be doing, what should be expected of you, what's going to get your career off the ground, what are the steps you have to take, that even though those things are there and real in some way in your life, that the more important pieces of paying attention to yourself, what you need, what you feel, what the moment is bringing you, being where you are and recognizing that, that all of that is what feeds and fuels your art, as well as your art feeding and fueling the rest of your life. And that, for me, is such a big piece that each one of the six of you in different ways spoke to today that I think is one of the most valuable things I could have taken from today, and I hope the artists listening agree with me, that this place of integration, of allowing balance in your life to be there, it is probably already there, is my hunch. And it's the way you're paying attention, it's the way you're focused that does not allow you to see that truth, that deeper truth. Thank you, panel. I'm so excited you came today. I'm thrilled with the depth and range of the responses. This brings us to the end. Come back tomorrow for the second half of our wonderful experts who will tell answers to your questions about selling your art. Email me if you have questions at info@smartest-telesummit.com and learn about what Smartest is up to by visiting www.smartest-telesummit.com. So artists, one and all, how are you going to sort through this information and determine what will work for you individually? What kind of a commitment can you make to it? Until tomorrow, same time, same bridge line, and a new panel of experts who will just sell your art, I wish each one of you prosperity and continued creative flow. Goodbye, everybody, and thank you so much.